Do you know what CES is?
No idea.
The Consumer Electronics Show down in Vegas.
Okay, why don't you just say that?
Well, they call it CES. I didn't name it.
LOL.
Anyways, it's going on in Vegas right now, and
Okay.
Canon pleased to announce the 6D Mark II
No.
with a bunch more cross-sensor focus points and ISO 50-something thousand.
This always happens to me. I shouldn't have bought it. I shouldn't have bought it.
Just kidding.
Oh, yay.
Wah,
My wife's chirping me now.
Hello and welcome to episode 106 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me as always is
Adam in Vancouver, British Columbia.
What's going on, Adam?
Same old, same old. Another week, another podcast.
Yeah, but what'd you do tonight?
I had date night with my wife.
Okay, give me the short version. What movie did you see?
No, we don't got to go into that. You're just going to rip on me for seeing a musical.
I don't think so. I think a lot of people see that show.
I saw Les Miserables.
Okay. Well, you took the wind out of the sails now.
I was waiting for the barrage. I saw The Expendables Part 2.
Yeah, sure you did. Although
Arnold
in French,
Schwarzenegger
in
have
French
anything?
it's the same translation.
I was going to say, does Arnold Schwarzenegger have anything new out there?
He does.
He does. I went and saw that.
Yeah. Are you joking? He hasn't had anything new in like 15 years. And he does, I think, this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'm not going to see it.
Is he in Expendables 2? I heard there's an Expendables 2. Is that already on DVD?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. But he has something new.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I'm going to see that.
Yeah. You hear those screeching sound? That's the show coming to a halt.
You should have you should put that audio right in there at this point.
why don't you just do the sound effect first? Do it. You do it.
Is that good?
Well, it's something. Okay, you got your 6D. Oh wait,
yeah.
Weather? You got weather going on?
It's been pretty nice here.
Good, snowing here.
Okay, so we win.
Yeah, well, on the other hand, I'm going to take my kids sledding when it does that.
That's good. We can always go to the mountains for that.
So that's fun. Yeah, that's the card you get to play. We'll always drive the 2 hours up to Seymour Mountain.
Or 45 minutes.
Well, yeah, but you don't live there. You drive home.
That's true.
And if you get stuck in traffic 15 minutes each way, how long does that add up to?
I'm not going to do the math for you.
2 hours.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Vindication.
Okay.
So you got your 6D in your hand for a week now.
Yeah.
Literally for a week. It probably has not left your hand.
No, it's quite the opposite. You know my life Monday to Thursday, it's work and not a whole lot else. So today was Friday and I might have taken some pictures tonight except for date night. So didn't happen. So I really haven't taken many pictures. I had it in my hands for about 10 minutes the other night or yesterday evening when I took my challenge photo, and that's been it. So I'm looking forward to maybe taking some pictures tomorrow. But yeah, really, really haven't done much. I did one picture that I threw up on Facebook of the shirt of my daughter. Remember, I was bragging about the best camera shirt ever. I think
yeah.
Did we go to air with that? Was that on the podcast?
No, that came after.
Okay, so anyway, so I was bragging about that shirt and I put it up on Facebook. So anybody who hasn't seen that, best shirt ever. Not in my size, but best shirt ever. So I took a picture of that. And that's been it. So I'm eagerly anticipating maybe some pictures this weekend.
You took a picture of yourself. Another picture of yourself, though.
Oh, that's right. I took one of myself to kind of celebrate the start of the hockey season because the NHL labor dispute is officially over.
So the millionaires and the billionaires quit arguing how to split up your money.
That's right.
And now you get to go back. Good. That worked out well.
Yeah, worked out well. I'm going to mostly watch on TV, so I don't know. However they make money from that.
Right. No, it's free. I think they just give it away. That's their business model. Like us. Now I'm no, I saw that picture, and now aside from you looking like Jodie Foster's chasing you down, it's a good photo, man.
You know what? I did the exact same photo, not exact same, same light of a photo with my wife, but mm-hmm. not being such a goofball and her just smiling with a sort of a hockey stick on her shoulders. And I love the photo, and she still has not posted it anywhere. Not on the blog, not on Facebook. I've been hounding her every day saying, hey, it's a good picture. Put that up. Because mine was kind of the goofy version.
Right.
And yeah, so hopefully that'll go up soon, because her photo is it's a better photo than one of her.
Are you blowing the dust off, or are you trying to make out with your stick?
I'm doing both all at once. That's the mystery there.
Right.
Yeah. So both. I'm gonna argue both.
No, but I was gonna let you know I like this this photo. This is one of your better photos that you take. One of your best ones. I'm not joking.
You like it? Yeah. I'm glad you like it. I liked it. I did a couple others in this sequence where I actually was more making out with the stick.
Okay.
And they just looked full on creepy, so I didn't post those anywhere.
Right. Yeah. No, I didn't mean the subject matter. I meant like the lighting and the setting
here.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it looks, same with me.
It looks like in the past, you know, and this is a typical sort of learning curve, is that once you start doing off-camera flash, you know, like as we've mentioned before, you tend to really go off-camera and just run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like so the opposite of on-camera flash that you can really tell, and it looks lit. Whereas this right. one looks a little more subtle, a little more effortless.
Okay.
And looks like you know what you're doing.
Well, I think I do, so...
Yeah,
I'm going to argue I do.
Well, you don't have to argue. I'm giving you a compliment.
Okay, I'm still arguing, though.
Did it seem backhanded?
No, I don't think it seemed backhanded, but you seem to have a surprised tone.
No, I was going to add a for at the end. It looks like you know what you're doing. For you know.
Okay.
You fill in the blank. I didn't know what was PC to call you on the air.
Right.
I think we can still use airhead. I think that's the last word...
Yeah, I think you can get away with that.
Available. What was the lighting on this? One light, two lights?
That's two lights.
Right.
So both kind of, I mean, this is the lighting, the sort of light that I see in the photos they use, you know, for like UFC. Look at any UFC poster. I don't know. Do they have that in Germany? Do they have the UFC posters up at all the bars?
No.
The light comes from both sides. It's kind of sandwiched.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. That's what I'm going to call it. I'm going to call it a light sandwich. So I got two lights, one shot pretty much almost directly from one side and one from the other side. And then I used a gray piece of background paper in behind me.
Okay.
And so I just basically, I've got one. One is in the reflective umbrella. So one light is shooting off of the reflective umbrella. And then the other one was just a hard light tuned way down. But they're both pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing in the middle, and that's it. So that is pretty easy setup. Done in a matter of, I don't know, 5 minutes with the setting the backdrop up.
Nice. And we're gonna call it a light witch, by the way.
A light witch. Yeah, so I'm sure there's a... it's the light that I've seen a lot of times in those UFC posters. It seems like every fighter is lit that way. Just mm-hmm. It's a head and shoulder shot, and the lights always... It looks like that. So I was basically... That's kind of the lighting I was going for. I was looking at those posters going, I kind of like that. It seems like it would be relatively simple. So I just... that was the reverse engineering.
So next week you'll do one of you with no shirt and just covered in bacon grease.
Yeah. Oh, and I have a, I think I put up a photo of my dad with the WWE title belt that I gave Jack and Sarah for Christmas, but really was a present to myself.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to put the strap on my shoulder and then I'll get a shot.
Nice. I'm liking it.
Yeah. Something like that.
We can all look forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's it. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Nothing.
Great.
Yeah. Sorry. Really... Should I sell that more?
Yeah. Maybe you do the screeching halt sound now.
No, I'm just being honest. We just call that honesty.
Okay.
With your 6D,
yeah.
People have been very interested and asking about crop sensor and full frame and all that.
Yes.
And so once you have a little more hands-on time with it, we're going to do a show all about that, all about the ins, the outs, the what have yous.
Okay.
But for now, I wondered if you could touch on a little controversial, I can't even say that word, subject, want versus need.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you need this camera?
I did not need this camera.
Your wife's not listening, right?
Yeah, she's listening. Oh. But it was definitely a want rather than a need. I could see for somebody who shoots a lot of weddings and potentially low light situations that this would be more of a need than a want. For my tastes, it's not like I could not do with my crop sensor camera, and the glass that I have for it were perfectly adequate, just that I've sort of reached a point where I felt like if I had the money, then I would definitely like to upgrade my gear. And that was a situation that presented itself, is that, you know, I was not going broke on this purchase, and it was a gift. And so ultimately it was something that I wanted, not needed. And for those of you out there who have who have the finances, this is a great, great upgrade, but by no means something that I absolutely needed.
Right.
Yes, but that being said, I do plan on doing more photography work in the future, just kind of more as a side sort of gig. And, you know, I definitely will make use of the functionality of this camera, but yeah, I could live with not having it.
Okay, leads me to my next question. Can I borrow it?
Yeah, no, you absolutely can.
I'm just joking. I'm really far away right now, so.
No, and I realize that. That's why I said yes.
Okay, good thing, good call. Damn.
Yeah, if you're next door, I said no chance. Yeah.
I would never borrow it anyway. That's too much pressure.
Too much pressure, yeah.
Don't want to do that. One thing to come out of the CES that's going on down in Vegas.
Yeah.
Fuji announced their update for the X100, the mirrorless little rangefinder camera.
Okay.
Have you ever seen those?
No, I haven't. I've seen, actually, that's not true. I've seen them in magazines. I've just never seen it actually up close.
Right. Yeah. I've shot around with it a little bit in the store and, quite like it.
Okay.
And they did an upgrade, which I don't know what the upgrade, a few upgrades to it that apparently are awesome with, more megapixels, focus, faster focus, stuff like that. But it is expensive.
How much?
I saw that pre-orders are like $1,300.
Okay.
And that's for it's a fixed lens, meaning not only is it not zoom, you can't take it off.
Right.
And it's a 23mm lens, which with that sensor basically is the equivalent, range of view, the field of view.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of a 35mm.
Okay.
And that's it. Like, that's it. It's on there.
Yeah.
And
probably great for just sort of the everyday walk around camera, though, right?
Yes, it's fantastic for that. That's the thing, is it is really good at one thing. And
it's small, probably, right?
Very small.
Yeah.
It's something that I very much want. I very much... It sounds like they've got, with the new one dialed in with the new manual focus features are really good. And this is kind of what I've always kind of wanted, was right. This kind of little rangefinder with manual focus stuff, something that gets out of your way, but yet takes really sharp pictures. And I know a lot of guys have been really excited about this, the first version of the camera and love it. Guys will shoot weddings with it because it's that good. However, where it fits into my workflow at $1,300 is still a little bit high.
Right, yeah.
Sounds like it's worth the money. I'm not suggesting it's not worth it. It's just, again, to go back to that want versus need. It's something I want and don't really need.
Right.
But
And to me, the other thing is, I think you have to consider, where you are with your, not just with your finances, but where you are with your camera gear. My T2i was definitely... you know, like that purchase was not a big purchase to begin with. And so as far as my learning curve is gone and the time I've invested and the lenses that I have, basically to me, the T2i was essentially holding me back. And if I had a, you know, a 60D already, it probably wouldn't have been the same situation. Right. Or 7D, but because of where I was on the camera spectrum, I was still at the very much the entry level end of things with the camera body, essentially the brain of my operation, mm-hmm. and the glass I had was far superior to my camera body. And so for me, you know, that upgrade, even though it's still being a want, it was a big want and a humongous upgrade for me as a photographer.
That is a big leapfrog that you made. It's one of those things that, yeah, if you had the 50D or the 60D or the 7D or some other camera like that, it would be a much tougher sell to yourself.
Absolutely. So I think people, when they're thinking about their own situation, have to consider where they're at. And for me, it didn't make any sense to upgrade from a T2i at this stage to go to a 60D or to a 7D even, just because of and the type of pictures I want to take, just in terms of my needs. I would rather now spend a bit more money and have exactly what I want than think I was going to make another upgrade and then another one a year down the road. It just didn't make much sense to me.
So if you have a 50D or a 60D, just throw it in the garbage.
Yeah, do that.
It is a piece of crap.
Yes. No, that's not true.
That's absolutely not true at all. I still shoot with my 40D on an almost daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not going to get rid of my T2i or my Sigma 30mm, though. That's going to be my camera when I don't want to lug the 60 around, or when I'm worried about having it on me or going to a place like the beach where I'm going to probably be in a situation where I might be more worried if I'm changing lenses out on the beach. I'm probably just going to take that other camera with me. So I have no plans to get rid of it. Going to come in handy, I figure.
I think that's the way I work with mine as well. So, all right, what'd you shoot this week? Well, we already went through that. You didn't shoot much of anything.
No, nothing but my challenge photo. So I've got nothing to report. So you go ahead on that one.
I'm going to echo your sentiments. This is going to be a very short segment.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to just go next door and see what my neighbor shot. Because nothing. There were a few photos here and there, like just candid stuff, or, you know, went for a walk with my daughter and, you know, shot photos of that, but nothing particularly challenging.
Okay.
Except for the fact that it turns out shooting a 1.5-year-old is like the most difficult challenge there is.
Yeah, it's definitely it changes.
It's we've kind of hit the point where a few months ago, I don't know if she didn't want to move or just couldn't or whatever it was. she could walk around, but she wasn't exactly, you know, darting out of the frame like she is now.
Right.
And now she's getting into the defiance. I guess she's capped it off at 10,000 photos. She's like, that's good, Dad.
Yeah, I think you got me.
I think. Was I in focus? Okay, let's move on.
And that's the same thing I'm at with Jack, who's 3.5, is he's harder to pin down for photos. And Sarah now, you know, she has no problem, you know, posing for photos. So again, I think you kind of go through those periods where either, yeah, they want to do it or they have no interest whatsoever in doing it. But the nice thing about your daughter now is you can kind of catch her interacting with things and she'll do it for much longer. Like, for example, you know, if she's playing a little game on the floor with, you know, a ball or whatever, stacking things, like her attention span is going to probably be much longer. So then you have time to go and get your camera and catch her in the act.
We're starting to get into that where no.
No?
That's
it will happen. It will 1.8 years.
Yeah, I'm getting burned on a few of them.
Go to get your camera and then she's gone.
Well, also, you know, up until now, it's sort of been, I like to keep my camera out so it's ready to go, you know, as soon as she does something cute, which PS is everything to me.
Yeah.
I grab the camera and it's right there. But now that she likes to, you know, drink out of her own cup and juggle fire, I can't exactly keep the camera out now.
Right.
Because she doesn't care about anything else. Oh, those balloons don't interest me. Pass me the hammer and Daddy's camera. That's what I want. So.
Okay. Yeah, no, I understand that.
So anyway, so I'm, like I said, I need to borrow your 60.
Okay. All right.
So that's
I'll airmail it to you.
No, we have them here. I'll just charge it to you.
Okay.
Photo challenge.
Photo challenge. You issued this photo challenge.
Yep. What was it? It was sort of in honor of you because, well, not really honor. It's more so because you're shooting your mouth off about the extreme ISOs.
Which I hadn't tried the extreme, but I'd sort of gone in the middle. And I still will shoot my mouth off about it because it is unbelievably awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The high, well, I won't say the high. If you consider 5,000 or 8,000 ISO high, then yes, it is ridiculously good on this camera.
I think any photographer considers that very high.
Yeah. Okay. So it is
looking
good.
Back, when I shot your wedding way back in the day.
Yeah.
And that we've mentioned this before, but for those who don't know, it was sort of on the precipice of digital.
Right.
When you got married. And so I wasn't shooting digital. I was still a videographer at the time. But I came and shot your wedding on film.
Right.
And I knew that the situation was I wanted to shoot it on high speed film in the relatively open, airy church. Like
right.
it was rather light in that church, but still relatively speaking, I needed a quote unquote fast film. So I shot black and white and I shot color. Do you know what the ISO was? The highest ISO was on the super high speed black and white I bought?
I'm gonna say 3,000, something in that range.
1,600.
1,600, okay.
And that was like I had to, you know, go and whisper something to the clerk at the photo place and tell him the password, and we had to go back and, you know, get it out of the secret bin. Because
right.
they didn't just keep that out. They weren't just selling that.
Right.
And the color film, they had just come out with, Fuji had just come out with a new color film at the time, and it was 3,200, which was, I couldn't believe it, that existed.
Right.
So that was a lot of the indoor stuff was shot with that. So 3,200 was like, holy cow, I'm going to shoot some stuff in the dark now.
Yeah, and that was the number that was ringing in my ear was the 3,200.
Yeah. And so now that, yeah, 5 or 8,000 is ridiculously high. And,
yeah.
And it looks good. So let's get into your picture first because, you know, this was all about you.
Okay, well, my camera, because the challenge was to shoot on the highest ISO. So for my camera, the highest ISO before you go to the expanded, because we said not to do that, because that's when it just gets stupid. But the high ISO on this camera is 25,600, which practically I don't think I would ever actually use.
Right.
Unless I was shooting the night sky or something and I somehow needed a fast shutter speed.
If you're shooting the night sky and needed it to look like day, then yeah.
Then maybe, yeah. And again, not a need for me, but so this photo is of my son Jack, who is riding his tricycle, and it looks like the middle of the day, but actually that's at 4:45 2 days ago, and it's getting dark. Like sun is well down and it is dark, and he's riding his tricycle, and I want to freeze him mid ride. So we're going to do the exifoku, right? So I don't need to give it all away. But he's of a second.
Okay, oh, so you didn't want to give it all away.
No, I haven't given you the aperture.
Yeah, I've already done up the exifoku.
You've already done it?
Yeah, and I pulled the shutter speed on both of them.
Oh, beautiful. Well, now you're going to put it back in and pull the aperture.
No, I'm going to kill that. I'm going to kill the I'm just going to bleep it out, so don't worry. So if people are listening, we bleeped it out.
Okay, so sorry. So you know, basically I've got him here frozen in motion, and it looks to me like this is probably shot when there's a fair amount of light out. And I mean, look at it, the sky over the trees there, and it's very light, and this, I assure you, was dark. I took a picture at about a minute earlier at an 8,000 and a 5,000, and when you get down to about 5,000, it looks ridiculously good, in my opinion anyways. 8,000, you're starting to see a lot more grain, and at 25,600, obviously even more. But if I'm looking at this as a 4x6, I mean, I could print this.
You could print this, yeah. Before we get into the Exavoku part, the wild new feature here on the Two Hosers Photo Show.
Wild. It's wild. Wild.
It is sweeping the my office now. Just kidding. Nothing sweeps the office.
No, you're going to have a shirt made up. Or maybe the coffee mug.
I think we'd get sued if we did that. I'm sure somebody owns Sudoku, like they own Happy Birthday.
Yeah, and you can't use anything that ends in Oku.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Anyways.
What if you lead with Oku?
Anyways, so your photo.
Yes.
Yeah, from ignoring all the Exavoku stuff and the grain, it is a very good photo. Now
I won't say anything. Go ahead, just pump my tires.
It's considering the circumstances that I know when this was taken. It does look a little bit blue, and that's kind of the giveaway that it's taken late in the evening.
Yeah,
which you know, in theory, this could be taken at 3:45. On a regular ISO, though.
Yes.
So that's the difference. Now, here's where, you know, it breaks down. It's not crazy sharp.
No.
Now, and this is scaled down from how many megapixels is your camera? 20?
20 point something, yeah.
Okay, and so the output that we're putting up on the screen is basically 0.4. Of right. 1 megapixel, okay?
Yes.
So 400,000, roughly. A little bit more, 500. Probably half a megapixel.
Right.
So when you scale it down, you do see benefits of the noise reduction.
Right.
You know.
And again, this was shot with the noise reduction function on the camera turned off.
Doesn't matter.
No, I'm just saying that because everything I read said don't ever have that on.
Yeah, but you shoot raw, right? So it doesn't matter anyways.
So it won't factor into that?
No, I believe unless they change it on the 6D, but on the 5D and previous versions, it only kicked in. Like the low light or long exposure or whatever it was, whatever they call it.
They have a high ISO noise reduction function that you can either enable or disable. So
right.
That is disabled. I don't know what it does. I just disabled it.
I understand it's only for JPEG. I could be wrong.
Okay.
But in that case, it's when you do have that enabled on shooting JPEG, it slows everything down a little bit.
Okay.
Again, it's relatively speaking, it's not that slow, but compared to its fastest speeds. You tend to add the noise reduction in post, like an aperture or something like that.
Okay. And none of that was done.
None of that was done. And even when it is done, it kind of softens things is what it does. Now it's getting very, they're getting very good at it. But anyways, so let's talk about that. At full resolution, if we're going to zoom in and, you know, do the pixel peeping, it's going to look really unsharp.
Right.
However, this is one of those situations where in the past, this photo wouldn't even exist. So who cares? No.
Exactly. This is shooting, you know, and realistically, who is really using 25,600 as something that they're going to keep? I mean, I can't think of, other than we talked about in the night sky, as that really being a setting that you're going to use on a regular basis. But 5,000 is, it's remarkable, which
right.
Again, like you say, didn't exist a couple of years ago, or not in a way that it was really usable.
So on this, let's get into your settings. You shot this ISO at 25,600, 85 millimeter lens.
Yep.
At f/5.6.
Yes.
Now, and the shutter speed is what we bleeped out earlier, and that's what we're going to have to guess. Now, I'll give people a hint. It's more than you need.
Yes. But recognize that he is pedaling a tricycle relatively fast, coming straight at me. So I was trying to stop motion here.
Correct. You know, he's not Lance Armstrong.
No, he's fast for 3.5 though on a tricycle.
Okay.
He motors
fast for 3.5.
Yeah.
We'll put that on the UFC poster. So there's that. Anyway, the parts. This isn't even English that I'm speaking at this point. the part of the picture that really struck me is that, yes, it's grainy. That's how it goes. If you compare this to anything else you would have shot with film or whatever, which would be way, way more grain, it looks good. But the digital grain in here looks phenomenal.
Yeah, it looks, it's pretty pleasing. I agree. And maybe the combination of colors too. But I don't mind the grain at all. And I want you to also post, just as a comparison, the similar picture that I took from 5,000 and 8,000.
Okay.
Just to show, you know, the difference in the ISO. And when you get to the 5,000, it looks clean. Like, you lose almost all of that. Even like when I zoom in and pixel peep and aperture, it looks good. So
yeah,
the 5,000 seems to be the sweet spot. Even when I go up to 6,400, you start to see it more. Mm-hmm. But at 5,000, it's remarkable.
Good. Well, good to know. The one thing where I do see it drop off is I see the red in his helmet.
Yeah.
It sort of bleeds a little bit. And that might be our downscaling or the way you saved it. There's a lot of steps between your camera and me publishing it.
Right.
So it's hard to say exactly where that is, but that tends to be kind of one of the breakdowns there. You can see the sort of the black pixelation in there. And again, really splitting hairs at this point.
Right.
It's one of those situations, if you are ever using this ISO, you're trying to capture a genuine moment, which, and then as we know, the moment will trump the high ISO. So who cares? Or you just put your camera away.
Right.
So.
And as far as the and again, this is probably for another episode, but as far as the full frame deal goes and the sensor size, the full frame sensor, from my understanding, is what allows the high ISOs to be this good, right? Like, I don't think anytime soon we're going to see a crop sensor do, you know, 8,000 or 10,000 ISO cleanly the way the full frame sensor does, right?
That's what I understand. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
And so I don't know all the behind the scenes stuff of why I've read about it, and everything I would say would, you know, just be regurgitating stuff that I've read from other people. But that's the impression I get, is that the larger sensors the larger pixels, for lack of a better word, they're not pixels, photoreceptors or whatever they're called, play a part.
And someone was asking on Facebook, and I think I made a comment where the game changer that this is for me is I don't own a 70-200 2.8. I own a 70-200 f4, which is unstabilized.
Right.
So I got to shoot at higher shutter speeds when I'm hand-holding it all the time. And so where this makes a difference was that if I want to shoot on 5,000 ISO, whereas before I could only shoot on 1600 before the pictures looked terrible. Now all of a sudden, you know, like, I've got a lot of what is that? Two stops, more light to work with. So it's like I don't need that 70-200 2.8 because the camera can basically get pretty good, and I can shoot that f4 with a high shutter speed still by upping the ISO.
Now there's a law of diminishing returns to think about. Now that works going from the, you know, L lens to an L lens.
Right.
You can't use the same argument to go, well, I don't need the 70-200 f2.8. I'll just use, you know, the 18-55 kit lens.
Right, right.
It, you know, it doesn't work like that because there are other factors. But what's interesting, where I see the benefit of high ISO, because I'm kind of at a 1600 is the max I ever need. I don't find myself ever really wanting more. Although this does look awesome, no question. But where it does get interesting is if you're shooting with the 2.8 version of the 70-200.
Right.
At 2.8, because you need every inch of that aperture.
Right.
Your depth of field is going to be tiny.
Right.
If you need depth of field, well, now all of a sudden, you need to stop down to a 5, 6, or an 8 anyway.
Right.
And so the benefits of that part, though, those section of the benefits associated with that lens are now lost. So now you need to compensate somewhere else, and ISO is a great place to do it.
Right.
So, whew. That's your shot. I gotta have a quick shower. I'm sweating.
Yeah. And just to slip in another quick point here, because all the, again, for anybody who's actually thinking that they might go out and buy a 6D, and the big criticism that you're going to read, if you read everything I read, which is everything that's out there, I assure you, is that the main criticism is the autofocus system, which is very similar to the 5D Mark II,
okay,
which is the center point is the cross type. There aren't any other cross types, and it's a very simple autofocus system. And some will argue, you know, you need many more points and all the rest of it, and that the autofocus system isn't great. It misses the center point, which is what I use to focus all my shots anyways, was fantastic. Shooting low light, and which I've done now in a hockey arena, and now just shooting the kids on bikes moving around in darkness, it didn't miss. I did not miss one shot where it was missed as a result of focus. And that's on servo mode in the rink, like I said, and on bikes, and I didn't see anywhere I said, wow, that just missed.
Right.
So again, you're if with the using the center point now in servo, you're obviously going to end up with your subject in the middle of the frame. So that's it's more limiting from a composition standpoint. But I mean, you know, it's you've got obviously the wider field of view, so you can crop for composition if need be, but that middle point is unbelievably good.
Absolutely. It's a pretty good problem to have.
Yeah.
You know, only 21 of my focus points are awesome, and the other 42 are, you know, subpar. Oh. Okay, well, I shot a photo, too.
Great. So, let's see it.
Great. Oh, I love the enthusiasm. Fine. You still here? Okay, I shot the cow.
All right. That's I'm it. Looking at it, yeah.
Not much going on here besides... moo.
Right. And this is 6400? Is that what we're looking at?
Correct. The 5D Mark II maxes out at ISO 6400.
Right.
I shot mine with the 70-200 lens, F4 lens.
Okay.
At 200 mil. This is zoomed all the way in.
Okay. Because you really wanted to make that cow look good.
Yeah. You don't want to give the cow that sort of fat face.
This kind of looks like the cow's giving you the stink eye.
No, it's like a little heart or something on his eye.
Oh, I thought he was giving you... I thought he was giving you the horns.
No. Anyways, and I did shoot at F4, so that's the Exifoku right there. 6400, 200 mils, F4, what's the shutter speed? This week we're going to guess the shutter speed of both. And I even went ahead and stripped the Exif data out of Adams this week for the first time.
And you know what? If you had given me some show notes, I would have known not to give away the shutter speed, in which case you wouldn't have had to bleep it.
Would not have read them. You would not have read them.
That's true.
Yeah. So next week, I will send you the Exifoku beforehand.
Great.
And so you can have a look at it, what I've deemed to be the missing link.
So now looking at your photo and the ISO 6400, I mean, again, looks pretty good to me.
It does. Now, there is a trick to high ISO.
Okay.
And that is proper exposure. You still need to want to have a little bit of light.
Right.
You know, you want to find a contrasty situation. Now, where I shot this in the barn, this cow was the very, very back of the barn. And okay. So there was a tiny bit of light coming in. It was very, very dark. Like, you never would have gotten a shot on any other ISO, like anything lower. You needed 6400 for this one.
Okay.
I don't know if that gives away my shutter speed or not, but that's what we have to guess, the shutter speed. But yeah, there was a little bit of light streaming in, barely enough to see the thing, but there was a high contrast situation. If you get into a flat lighting situation and you still try to pump up the ISO, that's where you see the real problems happening.
Okay.
With the grain and whatnot. So that's it. I mean, I also went to black and white. I find that if you convert to black and white, you lose a lot of the issues associated with a high ISO.
Right.
Now, that being said, in your picture, your color picture, they seem to have done a good job of that.
And I actually considered doing it in black and white, but I didn't because I kind of wanted to show what 25,000 looks like.
Right. I think that's where a lot of the advances have been made in the last couple of years with the Mark II and other cameras. When it gets in the color photo, when it gets into the sort of pushed ISO, the colors get a little bit funky. And so the grain doesn't necessarily, I don't know how to describe this, it doesn't necessarily look natural.
Right.
Whereas in black and white, it tends to sort of blend in a little bit. And this right. looks a little bit like grain versus digital noise.
Right.
So that's it.
No. And I mean, yeah, and I mean, I would look at your photo and I would never have thought, you know, until you told me, and obviously it being part of the challenge, that this was a high ISO picture.
Right. You're right. It's looking for the right situation. I would never have taken this picture except for the challenge.
Right.
So it's not like, oh, I need 6400 because I want to go shoot cows in the barn.
Right. You know? No, I hear you.
Or I might light those cows. I might bring some supplemental lighting.
The other thing I want to, again, continue on my trend of pumping up the new camera technology is somehow auto white balance. I mean, I have no idea. I didn't read anything about it. But auto white balance on the new camera kicks the crap out of the auto white balance on the old camera. Yeah. So I don't know, different formulas or it's just smarter. But for whatever reason, it is close to bang on in the situations that I've tried it on, which weren't easy lighting situations. I mean, hockey arenas, the lighting is very mixed and off color, and it did a good job in there. Again, with the light it could find in a low light situation, I did not have to do much tweaking when it came to white balance correction. So I think my other camera really, really fell short in auto white balance, or this one's just really good at it. I'm not sure which way it is there.
Well, let's save that for your I Love My 6D show.
Okay, what's this one? This episode's quickly becoming that.
That's what we're trying to avoid. this is your initial findings, and we'll go into greater depth at another time.
Okay, I'm going to stop talking about
once you've used the heck out of it. So
yeah.
All right. Clearly, I win the photo challenge because I forgot to tell you it was supposed to shoot cows, and so.
And I thought it was whoever has the higher ISO wins.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Longer lens that helps.
So that's what your wife says.
Well, make it weird. Thanks a lot. So this week's topic, we're going to finish off what we didn't do last week. Now we're running out of time this week too to finish off part two. of how to shoot an event inside behind the scenes. I went with behind the scenes.
This reminds me a lot about a lot of the movie that I was at this evening, and that, you know, if you think
that I'm miserable.
No, not that you're miserable, but it's like 2 hours and 37 minutes, which is probably roughly the time that it's going to take to get through last week's and this week's podcast.
Mm.
And, you know, you sit through the first half and you think it's going to be over soon, but then it just never ends.
Right.
The last 15 minutes, your butt's getting sore because you can't possibly sit there any longer.
So this is part two of the behind the scenes. I had a whole bunch of names picked out for last week. I thought I was going to be really cute and call it No Jacket Required because I didn't wear a jacket that night.
Right.
And I didn't know if anyone would get the reference or care, actually.
I think more the care part.
Yeah. Do you know it?
No.
Phil Collins' album.
Oh, I do know it. And I actually have that album somewhere. I thought it was a movie reference.
No. But that's the thing is, even now that you get it, it's not like, oh, yeah, I would have laughed my head off. You know? So we went with behind the scenes. And so this week, behind the scenes part two. So more scenes that you can see behind.
Okay. I can't wait for it.
Well, I wanted to restate my main purpose. I don't even think I stated it last week. About what I was hired to shoot at the event. It was mostly candid photos.
Okay.
No setup lighting. Like in past years, we've done like a photo booth type thing where people come in and you have all very well lit, and you shoot everybody coming in. But they wanted me to come around and shoot candid photos. And occasionally people would come up to me and ask for their photo, like for a semi-posed photo.
Right.
And so there are those kinds of photos in there. But I never approached anybody and said, hey, let me take your photo.
Okay.
It's just candid stuff. So So last week we talked about the reception part of the evening, and that was followed by dinner and then dancing.
Okay.
So went from the one reception area, which is the big open area that we saw, I posted pictures of.
Yeah.
And we move into the dining area, which was also a big open area with almost nowhere to bounce your flash. If you're looking at the picture...
I'm looking at a picture of three people. Oh, you mean the ceiling. Is that the picture you're talking about?
Well, no, this number five. Number five.
Yeah, I'm looking at that.
That's the dining area.
Okay.
And those lights on the left-hand side, those aren't mine. Those are some stage lighting for the speeches and stuff like that. So I have no lighting up. So on the right-hand side, you can see the windows that go out to Cole Harbor.
Right. Or
at that point, Burrard Inlet. I don't know where the cutoff point is. And then the left side, we have a nice brown wall or brownish taupe. I don't know. I don't know what color that is.
Okay.
Not white.
Not white, yeah.
Yeah, and that's how I see things. And then again, we have the exact same ceiling, which is very, very high and nothing to bounce off of.
Right.
So I'm faced with the same situation, but it's even worse now because if you can see in the background there, that's where the reception was.
Yeah.
Okay, you can see it's a lot lighter, a lot more ambient light than in the dining area. It was dark in there. And this shot I took specifically for the show, just to showcase what was going on.
Right.
And I think it's probably at 1/15th of a second just to get enough light in, to get an exposure.
Okay.
So it's very, very dark. So at this point, during, you know, drinks and the beginning, it's a long dinner. It's a long, I don't know how many courses, 30 course. I'll just say 30 course dinner. I don't know. I didn't count.
Okay.
So it takes, you know, it's drawn out a little bit. So I'm walking around from table to table trying to get pictures of people enjoying themselves, but not eating. You don't shoot people eating.
Right.
That's just, no one looks good eating.
Plus, maybe they have broccoli in their teeth or something.
That would fall under the nobody looks good eating,
right?
Category. So I try to go for those real moments where people are, maybe they're talking and laughing, discussing, you know, whatever they discuss. And so there's that. So now I'm going to be walking around at, I set my camera to ISO 1600.
Okay.
Which, as we talked, nothing but, that's the highest I like to go on a workable ISO.
Okay.
On photos that I have to deliver to a client, I don't like to go much higher than that if I don't have to. Okay. And so there's that. I shot with the 85 mil still. And basically it had to be at around f1.8 the whole time.
Okay.
Which f1.8, I could sometimes get away with up to 2.8 sometimes, depending. But at that point, your flash is going to have to work that much harder.
Right.
So I basically don't want my flash to have to go into overtime, which it's going to do anyways, because any bouncing is going to be done on either one of those walls, and that's a long distance. So you're asking a lot out of your, in my case, the 580 EX2.
Okay. Yep. Okay. I'm still with you.
And so at this point, I don't want to, the bulk of the main lighting is going to come from the flash, but I still want to have some ambience there. I want there to be context to these photos.
Right.
Instead of just basically flash right in their face and blackness behind. So I'm going to essentially, I'll say almost drag the shutter. Now, typically dragging the shutter, which we talked about probably a couple of years ago at this point.
That was a long time ago, yeah.
Which is a great technique. Maybe we need to revisit, but not today. So my shutter was coming in at around 1/60th, was to 1/80th. Sometimes I could get away with a 1/80th, and that would still give me enough context in the background.
Okay.
Now, that's completely reasonable. 1/80th is basically the bare minimum for holding your 85mm lens still.
Correct, yep.
I don't like to work on the bare minimum. I would normally like to shoot with around 1/200th. And the maximum being 1/200th. But I like to shoot in, 1/160 or 1/200th for my flash.
Okay, yeah.
Or with that lens, but in this case, couldn't do it. So, walking around, I didn't set it any lighting up. Like in the reception area, I did have the backlight that I had set up. But because we were on such a large area, everybody spread out, I didn't see much point in having the backlight set up. I would have had to set up two or three of them and then deal with, you know, which one's going to fire, should they all fire, and during dinner, all of a sudden, I keep, you know, bursting my flash off.
Right.
Like, multiple flashes. That's not going to make anybody enjoy their dinner.
You know what just occurred to me?
That I talk too much?
Yeah, I was going to say, why our podcasts run so long.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
What occurs to you? Is it because we talk about our new cameras a lot?
That too.
Yeah.
Touche.
It's like a fist fight here. Yeah.
Okay, so we get it. You didn't set up any backlight.
Okay. So, point being, going to go around and get images of people. Again, I can't reiterate this enough. The main tool that I ended up having to use was the... You go ahead and fill in the blank.
The dragging the shutter?
The black foamy thing.
Oh, the black foamy thing. I was still on the ambient thing. You were hammering me over the head with that.
Oh, no. Got the ambient light sorted out, and I shot ETTL.
Okay.
Again, manual flash would have been great. It would have cut the number of pictures I could deliver in at least half. Probably less than that. Probably would have been less than half by the time I get everything sorted out.
Okay.
ETTL just lets you work quicker.
Okay.
Quickly. So walking around within the crowds of people, I would kind of, you know, I would go through each table and kind of hit, you know, whoever was smiling or whatever was happening. The black foamy thing wasn't just, you know, a good tool to have. It was absolutely positively required.
Okay.
Not just to get directional lighting, because I'm bouncing most of my lights coming off of that brown wall, which was not ideal. I mean, aside from the color cast it's going to throw, the brown eats a lot of your light.
Yeah.
So if it's white, you know, great. You're going to get a lot more higher performance out of your flash, so you need to use every inch of it. So not just to get the directional light, but I threaded the needle between people eating dinner, people walking by. I had to be very specific where I pointed my flash so as not to basically light up everybody at the table.
Right, or blind people walking by.
I did nuke a couple of waiters on the way by. And that's true, and I felt bad. I was just like, oh, man, I got one guy right in the face.
And he dropped the bottle.
No, he didn't do that. But, yeah, I felt he was very nice about it. I really didn't see him coming. But that's part of what I was doing is while I was photographing the event, had to keep one eye on just traffic, people walking by.
Right.
Because I didn't want to do that. I mean, first of all, it's going to affect your photo. But the main thing being you don't want to blind anybody. But I did. So, sorry, guy. But yeah, so using the black foamy thing really not only allowed me to thread the needle of other guests at the table, but it gave me this wonderful directional light that we can see in a couple of the pictures, starting at 13. You got 13 up?
Yep, I do. That's what I'm looking at.
That is on-camera flash.
Yeah, and it looks great. It doesn't look like on-camera flash at all.
Right. You can see my one criticism is the girl on the our left. Little bit soft focus on her eyes.
Okay.
That's difficult to do. At f1.8, it's very difficult to hold everybody's focus.
Absolutely.
So that's one of those things where, oh, well.
You know what you could have done instead of setting up that light in the umbrella is you could have used the black foamy thing for that one.
Correct. Huh?
No, sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just yes-anding you.
So is there any other tricks here? Because we got the black foamy thing down.
The black foamy thing, it's go to picture 15.
Okay. I'm looking at it.
Again, this one is lit entirely by on-camera flash. This is one of the ones I'm most proud of because we got nice catch light in their eye.
Yeah.
And they're backlit.
Yes.
That is the on-camera flash.
Really?
Really. No other lighting coming in here. That is just bounced off the back wall. Now you can see in the background, I kind of hit those guys in the back a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, oh well.
It's fine, yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. They didn't
just looks
mind.
Like there's another, it just looks like there's another light.
Correct. So again, that one, that's where, I'm not going to say the thing again, that's where that tool comes in handy. I never ever, you never would have been able to do this without, with just standard bounce. It would never happen.
So you kind of shot this, aimed it just over and past them and let it come back?
Correct.
Yeah, very nice.
Yep. So we got that. That's an example. Again, number 17.
Number 17. Are people going to know which ones we're talking about? Are you going to write those numbers on the photos?
I think they're on there somewhere, but they'll figure it out.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at it.
There you go. Alec Baldwin's brother with the beard. He, again, same situation. That's on camera. Number 18. These are, how about I just tell you, these are all on camera flash.
Great.
Now, some of these situations were tougher than others because all along the one wall, now you have a lot to work with because you don't have to bounce the flash as far. On the other side, go ahead.
So sorry, just what kind of, and you said ETTL, so we don't really know what the flash power that is required is here.
It depends where the tables are, because the tables along the wall required less.
Obviously,
yeah. Now, yeah, and then on there was basically three rows of tables. There's ones along the wall, ones along the windows. Now, that was difficult because I had the windows to use, but obviously you don't get – windows aren't mirrors, right? A lot of it goes through, but you do get bounce off of it. You can use the windows as a bounce.
Right.
They are angled up, though, so it was eating a lot of the power of the flash was being wasted on lighting tugboats and the ceiling.
Right.
But enough was coming back that I could use that to bounce light.
Okay.
Of course, the difference being that the white balance was way different bouncing off those windows than it was the brown wall.
Right.
So that's where raw came in handy, and you know, and everybody's wearing a white shirt, so that kind of gives me something, a point of reference in the photo.
And you probably, I think, because you mentioned and showed some photos from last week with you did some gray carding, so
I did.
That probably helped as well.
Prior to going into dinner, prior to anybody showing up, I walked around the room and shot a bunch of gray cards in different areas of the room for reference points later. So
just heads up thinking on your part.
That comes in very handy. So I highly recommend getting there early and doing that, shooting a lot of gray cards. So the one difficult part, the dead zone, became the center row of tables because it was just very, very far to bounce light. Very far to go to get to the wall and very far to come back. And so by that time, a lot of light has been eaten. So you have very little to do. So I found that I needed a little bit more of a boost, maybe a little bit more in post. I had to bring up the exposures a little bit. So the pictures in the middle aren't as well lit. That's okay. just the nature of it. I don't know if I... the one with the backlighting, number 15, that's actually their middle of the room. So that's one that worked out.
Yeah.
But they didn't all work out quite as well. So that's something to think about. Your distance to the wall.
Okay, now what about 19? I'm looking at 19. It's a dance picture.
Yeah.
Give us a little, is this your new move, the Amber Hughes move on the dance floor?
Well, to be fair to me, I did do this slightly before I talked to her.
Okay.
And she sort of helped me hone the move, because yes, this is now, once we went to the dancing portion, I did set up an off-camera flash for backlight.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on here. And our subject right in the middle, I'm pretty sure, I'm trying to look, one of them's covering it. Either the lady in the front or the main subject is blocking the backlight. But that's what's causing the rim light around him. And then I'm, again, using on-camera flash to bounce off that brown wall to fill in the subjects.
Okay.
So that's a combination of ETTL bounce and off-camera flash, which I set up on as high as it could go.
And just one off-camera flash.
Just one. I'd considered using two, but at that point, because it required so much flash power during the dinner portion to light everybody, I was getting pretty low on batteries.
Right.
And I have a lot of batteries, but they were, like, I was probably shooting on full power with a flash every shot.
Right.
Which is a lot of juice. So at this point, I could have run two flashes, but I wanted to leave a little couple extra batteries in the bag just in case I went long. And also setting up two different flashes, you have to be careful about people slamming into them. So that's something to consider as well.
Right.
So I put this up high, zoomed it in to 85 millimeters, which is as far as the SB28 will go. Fired it off, I think, I'm going to say 1/32nd power. And just walked around the room using it for a backlight.
Beautiful. No, I like it. Looks good.
So there's that sample. That one, that's one of my favorite ones. And then the one right, the next one, number 20, is the last sample I used, was just, obviously, this one's a posed shot. The women asked me to, if I would snap their picture.
Yeah, and the they're basically covering the backlight.
Correct. But you can see it in their hair, is all lit up, and then, again, with the bounce flash to fill in their faces, which looks very directional as well.
Yeah.
And then the nice bokeh in behind.
Yeah. All looks good. And everything you said you shot with the 85 millimeter.
Everything here is with the 85, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Glad that that turned out well.
Any more questions? I can mention black foamy thing again if you want.
No. It looks like you did quite a bit of that. And you said everything was shot on an ISO of 1600 pretty much?
Correct. Yeah. I didn't go up or down from that.
No, I don't think there's much more to ask. Now, in terms of the 1.8, are you giving your subjects very specific instruction in terms of keeping their faces kind of parallel? I don't know if parallel is the right word.
Equidistant.
Equidistant. Yeah. Are you instructing your subjects in that way? And if so, how? Because I struggle with this, especially with, you know, younger subjects, with, how to keep them equidistant.
I struggle with that in German because I don't know the translation of that yet. And that's the one thing I try to do, is to try to explain that, yes, it is much better if the two subjects are almost the same distance from the lens in order to hold focus.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, you don't see a ton of them, but group photos that you can shoot with a shallow depth of a focus, mm-hmm. or depth of field, look fantastic, but are incredibly difficult to pull off.
They are. Yeah. In this case, I think most times during this event, I would position myself so that they would be an equal distance from the camera.
Right.
Which is sometimes difficult because, you know, now you're not in the right position for the backlight or whatever it is, or now you have nowhere to bounce. In that case, I will ask the subject to just move back a little bit. Like, you know, hey, talk to the woman on the right. Can you step back just, you know, a couple of centimeters? Or, you know, ask the other one to bring their face a little bit closer. It's just little subtle moves, but I tend to get it almost 95% of the way there myself and then have them do the last little tweak.
Okay.
So that's a good question. Something to keep in mind that when you're shooting those two or more people.
And so where would you, I mean, normally you're not shooting two or more people on a 1.8. Where would you say your sweet spot is for a group shot?
In terms of
aperture.
Even with group shot, starting at two people, I would like to be at 5.6.
Yeah.
Just to hold it. I mean, four is nice. If you can get them, if you can get their eyes on the same plane, that'd be great. And then four is good because then you get a nice, you know, blurred background. But 5.6 is kind of the where I like to start. 5.6 to 8. You know, but oftentimes you're dealing with a poor background, and that presents problems of its own.
And so if you're shooting, let's say you've got a group of six people, are you shooting, like, what lens in a perfect world would you be shooting that with?
This is the last question about groups, because we're going to do an episode on groups.
This is exactly what I'm thinking. I'm trying to give a lead in here.
Okay. I would probably shoot that with the 50 millimeter on the full frame with six people. Yeah. Likely what I would do. I don't want to go any wider than that. I would go to something like a 35 or something like that, but 50 tends to be, depending on, are we going to see their feet? I don't know. Like, is it going to be in tight? What are the parameters here? A lot of parameters going on.
Yeah.
So,
well, I always did group shots with the crop sensor and the 30 millimeter. So I'm thinking on the full frame, it sort of lines up with the 50, as far as, you know, a decent focal length for a bunch of people.
Right.
I guess outside it doesn't make as much difference, because you could just keep backing up. But in an indoor shot, you're not going to always have that ability.
You have to get creative at that point. But we are going to discuss that, because I'm group shots are very interesting. They're difficult to do, and they come up a lot. So we're going to dedicate a few. Not next week, though. Did you think we were doing this next week?
No.
Okay, good.
I heard some rumblings about maybe a guest appearance. Is that happening? I don't want to say anything if it's not happening.
You can say it. You go ahead and say it. I think the plan is, I mean, we have to, you know, lock down schedules and sign contracts, dot the I's and all that.
But your dad's coming on?
My dad will come on. No, it'll be a guy from your neck of the woods, Don Komareczka, making a return appearance.
I even hear he's got Facebook fans requesting his next appearance.
That's right.
Just hear the chants going out.
I heard a lot of it was less Don, more Adam. No.
Yeah.
More Don, less. I blew that. You know, it's getting late in the episode when I'm blowing jokes like that.
Yeah.
All right. Next week's challenge, Adam. I got one. Do you have one?
Okay. Shoot a picture of your wife posing with a hockey stick.
Okay, I got one.
I guess that one's out.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's out. Now, this one, you know, we're right in the middle of winter here.
Okay.
What color do you associate with winter?
Blue.
Let me ask you that again. What color do you associate with winter?
White.
Gray. The answer is gray.
Really?
Everything's gray. Clouds are gray. Everything's gray, man.
You either have snow or you have a very blue light. I don't get the gray part.
Okay, never mind that intro then. A lot of gray. There's a lot of gray. Normal people associate winter with gray.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of, yeah, it's gray days. You got, you know, the rain and all that in sure. Vancouver, whatever. So that's, yeah. This week is gray. That's the challenge, is gray. And not my hair. Don't shoot my hair.
No, that's more salt and pepper.
I wish there was more pepper. So that's it. Next week's challenge, gray.
Okay.
Websites. Adam, where can people not see your stuff, because your wife never posts anymore?
I know. She's been very bad, but when she does post, it's on schwartzchronicles.com or our Facebook, because I'm posting more and more pictures on Facebook because I can't depend on her to post regularly.
I'm excited that we're finally getting excited about Facebook in 2013, a good 6 years after it took off.
Yeah. Yeah, I try not to devote all my time to it, because it does seem to suck me in. I start, I look at the two hosers, and the next thing you know, I'm off on all sorts of different Facebook pages looking at all sorts of things. So
yeah.
I do usually try to check in once a day and see if anybody has asked any pertinent questions or, I don't know, made fun of me in any way so that I can respond. But
right.
I do check that. So feel free, anybody who would like to ask a question, if they feel intimidated to in terms of emailing us questions, that Facebook is a good avenue to take.
I tend to spend 15 minutes a day checking on our site for, like you said, questions and postings and stuff like that. And then I got 4 hours of who got fat? Wow. They let themselves go.
Yeah, that's right. So how about your stuff? Before we get too far off topic, where can we find your stuff?
AlanAttridge.com, the two of us, as Adam said, on our Facebook, or at twohosers.com, you can find everything you want to know. But Twitter, Facebook, potato chips, I think.
Great.
Yeah, everything you want to know. So that's it. Until next week, for Adam, it's me, Alan, saying get out there and make better photos.